Now, an hour of clarity for exhausted people of our nation mired in toxic partisanship. Left versus right, us versus them. While we pay to keep our politicians fighting, how do we, the people, rise up and solve the great challenges of our time? We do it by embracing freedom and liberty. There may be no such thing as a free lunch, but this hour is as close as it gets. Welcome to A Free Solution.
All right, welcome to A Free Solution. I'm Kevin Wilson-Yost for today. Thank you so much for joining us here on this wonderful Monday afternoon. We're live here at WYSL until 2 p.m. Give us a call if you want to participate in the show, 585-346-3000. That's 585-346-3000. We're also streaming online on the Free Solution Facebook page, Free Solution YouTube channel, Free Solution group page, and Kevin Wolf's Twitter. Wherever you listen today, thank you for being here. Thank you for being a part of the show. And please, again, leave your comments or give us a call if you want to participate in the show. Definitely open to new topics today. And would love to hear from you. Again, we Wednesday was fun to get a caller in from Hawaii. So, you know, that's it's always fun when something like that happens. So, again, give us a call, 585-346-3000, or leave your comments online if you're listening there. And, all right, so today what I want to start with, just talking about Rochester violence again. It was, the past week, a few different things have happened. Unfortunately, a three-year-old was shot, and, it's tough to figure out what the best way to respond to these things are. Right. And it looks like so far the mayor's Mayor Malik Evans is stepping up with more patrols in the area where that happened. And again, we've unfortunately been here before in Rochester. It's been the pattern over the last couple of years. And I don't know, people are disgusted by it. It's tough. And, and again, this comes from there's always this this inclination. I've talked about this before among libertarians. I've kind of done it too, where you say, okay, statistically, crime is down, like not in Rochester specifically, but across the nation, crime is down. There's less violence than there used to be a long time ago. And we're at a situation now where violence is up, though, right? Like, you have to acknowledge the reality of the situation that we're in. And so we come back to, again, what's the best way to handle this? Is it handled through more police presence? Is it handled by taking away guns, taking away people's means of being able to kill another human being easily, right? So the argument goes. Is it through other support programs? Is it through violence intervention programs that go outside of the police? Is it through mental health programs? There's something else. Again, is it giving people hope? Something that Larry Sharp has been great at talking about is a lot of times violence ends up stemming from lack of hope. It stems from lack of opportunity, stems from lack of chance of success, because when you see that as your only alternative to anything else, of get it, that's your only way of you see getting ahead in life, exercising some power, some control over what you are able to do, then, yeah, it becomes far more likely that people end up either turning to violence or accepting violence. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on. So we're going to talk about a few more of those things today, just because, and I know I've talked about it a few times before, but I think it's worth bringing up consistently when this becomes a problem, because I don't want to be accused again, and I could fall into this pattern. I don't want to be accused of dismissing this problem, because a lot of the obvious solutions that people talk about seem like they involve more government, more spending, and it's easy for me to say it's not that serious. We're not in the as bad of a situation as we were on a nationwide level decades ago, or even centuries ago. Violence, unfortunately, is a norm of the human condition. It doesn't have to be, but it is. We are a violent species. We, in many cities throughout human history, living in a densely populated area has been a violent, terrible experience. It's It's just what it is, right? And again, I say this as someone who's fundamentally optimistic about humanity. I think that most people are fundamentally good. Most people, most of the time. And a small percentage of the population are going to be bad in certain circumstances. And then an even smaller percentage of the population are going to be bad no matter what. So we'll talk about all this stuff. We'll you know, just kind of review this situation, talk about violence, bail reform. You know, bail reform is another one, too. I know we've talked about it a lot before, but I'm seeing discussions of that stepping up. It seems like Kathy Hochul and Lee Zeldin have kind of decided that crime issues are an important thing to talk about, because, you know, I was trying to watch football yesterday and saw just a barrage of political ads from both of them. And okay, so this is an important issue. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about, like, not only their solutions, but also the solutions that aren't being considered in these situations, right? Like, what doesn't come from the state? What does come from the ground up? And what can we do that's going to be both effective and doesn't, you know, take away our liberty? Doesn't it impose a lot of undue burden on the people impacted by these programs? And, of course, is cost effective too, right? What's not going to cost us money? So let's spend some time talking about that. Again, if you guys have any thoughts on that, give us a call, 585-346-3000. That's 585-346-3000. And so, you know, let's start back with, again, you know, is Rochester in a particularly violent situation because police have been defunded? Like, no, that's not exactly it. You know, our police budget's still fairly high. It was cut a couple years ago, a little bit, but it's already back well over that now. And that isn't to say that police aren't overwhelmed, that they feel like they don't have the resources to be able to execute their tactics to combat violence effectively. It's kind of a different situation, right? It's a different problem to handle. It's the same way we get in with the education system, right? Where the education system is like, well, we don't have enough resources to do this. But as we talked about, the city school district, for instance, has, you know, gets like $42,000 per student. And in the same way, the City of Rochester Police Department gets a pretty significant budget per capita here, right? It's a lot. It's expensive. But per person in living in the City of Rochester. So their per capita, they're getting a lot of resources. It's just a matter of, is the way the structure works right now effective for combating the problem that we've laid out? Is the strategy being used effective for the problem that we've laid out? Or are we thinking about it in the wrong way? You know, and I've said that quite a bit about education. It's just throwing more money at the problem isn't necessarily the only way to fix this. Because if you keep going, if you're throwing good money after bad, if you're doubling down on an investment that isn't fundamentally solving the issue, you need to step back. I think I want to say it was Elon Musk who said this, but he might have been quoting someone else. It's, you know, one of the biggest mistakes companies can make is optimizing something that, you know, shouldn't be done altogether. That's how I feel about certain parts of policing too. And so we're going to talk about that, you know, because we kind of stepped away from like the actual, like, reforms that could have come out of the defund the police movement. Not the radical actually abolish the police stuff. Like, as I've said before, I'm not really for that. But there were some central reforms that could have come out of that could come to Rochester, that have come to Rochester, some of which have started and some of which are still kind of forming right now. And I'll get to his comment online too. James on YouTube says, the retirement versus recruitment levels are way off from what I understand. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's definitely part of it. A bunch of folks are retiring, and, you know, that's part of it, right? Like, with the police, with the pension system, a lot of folks, they can kind of retire, you know, after, you know, however many years of service. Out, you know, depends on what the structure of your contract is, but, and they kind of count on new folks to join up, but it's tough, and people are hostile to police. And, again, I think part of that is the lopsided expectation of what police are expected to do. So again, we have the situation where they are one of the many tools that could be used to solve violence in the city, but not the only one. And again, it's a matter of how are they stopped? How do we stop the immediate violence, right? Like, do you need some extra thing to come in right now, stop the immediate violence? Is that going to be effective? And that's, we already have that. We have police surge in this area. We have some federal resources in this area. It's, you know, the mayor can declare a state of emergency on this stuff and get some extra resources towards this. What do you do to solve the immediate problem? And then once you have that, what do you do to solve the long-term structural problem, right? It's like a forest fire. You need to put out the immediate fire. You need to focus on doing that. But then after that's done, what do you do to make sure that doesn't happen again? Or when it does happen, it can be contained effectively through, you know, forest management, through, you know, more sensible policy. How do you do that? You know, prevent the spark from happening in the first place. So again, we're going to talk about both those things, all those things today, just because I think it's worth hitting again. It's salient. I think there's that poll I covered last week from Siena Poll. The kind of top two issues were the economy, which we talk about all the time, and crime. And again, this is a tough one for libertarians to talk about, because we want people to just be left alone. But the whole thing that we always say about libertarianism is, you know, the government shouldn't get involved unless you're hurting people or taking their stuff. So it's easy to say, just leave government to them. But like, specifically though, okay, what situations, what do you do when someone is hurting someone or taking their stuff? Where should the government get involved in these situations? All right, thanks again for joining us here on A Free Solution. Again, give us a call if you want to participate in the show, 585-346-3000. That's 585-346-3000. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Talk to you soon.
Your business relies on computers and technology to operate. Slow, unreliable networks and servers can cause unplanned downtime and affect your bottom line. The experts at Simple Tech Innovations are here to help. Their preventative maintenance program ensures that your computers and network are kept up to date and monitored for any issues, keeping your business running smoothly. They also help clients achieve HIPAA, PCI, and New York State cybersecurity compliance to keep your network safe and secure. Whatever your business IT needs are, Simple Tech Innovations should be your first call. They've won the best in Rochester 8 years in a row and have an A+ Better Business Bureau rating. Call them today for a free consultation at 585-200-3182. That's 585-200-3182. Simple Tech Innovations.
Hey, this is Kevin Wilson, host of A Free Solution. You ever need a tool for just one project, but didn't want to spend the cash for something you'd use just once or twice? Well, there's a new tool library in Rochester where you can borrow just the thing you need instead of buying a new one. It's called the Tool Shed from the Southeast Area Coalition, and membership starts at just $25 a year. Use it for home projects or to support your business. Learn more and become a member at seektoolshed.org. That's S-E-A-C toolshed.org.
Available in the WISL store at WISL1040.com. Official top quality tees, hoodies, and coffee mugs depicting the colorful WISL logo or the already famous Mount Worstmore line of merch depicting Mount Rushmore style are for worst presidents. Of course, you know who is front and center up on that mountain. WISL official items make perfect gifts, or they're a great way for you to make a personal statement. Locally produced and sold only in the WISL store at WISL1040.com.
A Free Solution on the WYSL stations.
Welcome back to A Free Solution. I'm Kevin Wilson, your host for today. Thank you so much for joining us here on this wonderful Monday afternoon. And again, we're talking about violence in the city of Rochester. What are some of the solutions to that? What are some of the core causes of these problems? And so again, we'll talk about the solutions being proposed by the major two parties, and, you know, whether or not they're going to be effective. Again, there's the state level solutions, right? There's the stuff that's going on, you know, at the level of governor, at the level of state legislature. You got, you know, Kathy Hochul, with the gun control laws that went through, that are, some of which are still being challenged in court, and they're claiming, you know, that's going to help with situations like the violence in Rochester, because a lot of it is, a lot of it is gun violence, right? It's not exclusively gun violence. There's you know, murders and assaults that take place that aren't necessarily gun violence, but is a lot of gun violence. And again, we're on track for another record-breaking year in Rochester. It's people are talking about it right now specifically because a 3-year-old was a victim. And again, on top of the people who've actually died of this, again, hundreds of people shot. It's a lot. It's bad in some areas in the city, right? Again, I live in a neighborhood. There are a lot of neighborhoods that aren't like that. It's you know, specifically, you know, some areas that are bad in the city. But so then again, the question is, you know, how do you tackle that, right? So you got state level solutions that coming out of Kathy Hochul, also state level solutions that are coming from Lee Zeldin, the Republican and other Republicans. So you know, the gun control stuff versus ending bail reform. You know, the Republicans are going to continue to make this about a bail reform and other criminal justice reforms going bad. And then you have some like local level solutions too, which are to increase police presence in particular problematic areas. Again, so like I said, it isn't every neighborhood in Rochester. It's a handful of areas where the interpersonal relationships between, you know, groups of individuals or gangs or however you want to phrase it are causing violence, right? Like that's a big part of it. And then, okay, so what can you do on the local level, right? There's solutions such as the police thing, as I mentioned. Then there's also solutions like, okay, send in nonprofit groups to talk about it. And I know folks on the right like to joke about like social workers, right? But as I said, it's not all that ridiculous to want to intervene with people who are likely to commit acts of violence because they don't see they feel so unsafe, or they feel so disillusioned, or they feel so, you know, hopeless that turning to violence seems like the answer. Because again, if you get into the mindset of like, well, what's even matter anyway? Like, I'm seeing people around me die. I'm seeing what's happening to my neighborhood. I might as well pick a side to protect myself, because otherwise I'm just a victim caught in the crossfire. There are people who unfortunately get to thinking like that. And that's, you know, that's where a cycle of violence can start, where you do that and you see what happens to your friends and you want to seek revenge and you don't see any other hope of escaping that situation, right? So you get the kind of government oriented solutions and sometimes nonprofit oriented solutions to these situations where you have folks who come in, try to talk to folks, try to give them other opportunities, try to give them something to do. Again, a lot of this are young people. It's not exclusively young people, but it tends to be a thing among, you know, folks who are younger, more impulsive, who are, you know, don't see any hope for a future, don't have any opportunity to succeed. Maybe they go to a school where that violence is surrounding them. And so you got, and that's part of the other local solution too, is like, what do you do with the school situation? Rochester did start to move towards taking, you know, school resource officers out. And so I got mixed feelings about that, to be honest. You know, if these officers could effectively, you know, stop violent individuals from acting in school, right? Like, again, the small minority of folks who are actually going to cause trouble and make it difficult for people who are just trying to go and get an education and live their lives, if they're able to intervene effectively in that situation, great. The problem is again, sometimes the school resource officers, not everyone, but some school resource officers in some areas end up using that power to be proactive in getting kids in trouble for stuff that isn't necessarily violent, or sometimes it is. It's a fight. It's you know, it's something going on. But instead of moving them towards intervention and getting support before they do something that really hurts someone, they end up with a criminal record and ends up kind of haunting them for the rest of their life. They end up getting labeled someone who is a you know, bad, violent person, and it ends up becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy. Read a comment from Gene on Facebook. It says, I drove a school bus in a neighborhood where the normal conversation on Mondays was which of their neighbors got shot over the weekend. Seriously, what can be done? Yeah, I mean, that's that cycle of violence. So that's where you get in those solutions where you got to immediately put out the fire, right? And again, I get some of that – you know, federal support, where you have the marshals coming in and grabbing folks who are, you know, wanted, where you have police stepping up some of the patrols, right? Like, I get that. It can go very wrong. I don't think the progressives are wrong where you have a bunch of police on edge. They can do things that where they could make mistakes. And you just – I think that the solution to that is, again, accountability. When someone does make that mistake, you just got to know, you know, like there's going to be consequences for your action. People need to see that, and they need to trust police. Like my whole thing with police is, again, it's really important that the public trust the police. And part of that is accountability and not allowing police to abuse their power of search, abuse their power to hurt someone and get away with it. Because, again, it's not always the – police shootings, the police killings, it's kind of the day-to-day harassment too. When you open up the door to having police feeling like they're in a battle zone, and in some ways they are in some neighborhoods in Rochester, it can create a toxic mentality on both sides of that. Again, and a lot of innocent people are caught in the crossfire of sometimes literally of those situations where they're just, again, trying to live their life. And they're looked at with suspicion by some police officers, again, who are understandably on edge. And then, you know, they're just trying not to get hurt from one of their neighbors, too. And so this situation's complicated. When folks talk about abolishing the police, too, the folks in those neighborhoods, a lot of times they want the police to be – they just want to be protected. They want that to work. So – okay, let's go into to more like local solutions, right? There's one, step up police resources. There's some complications to that, but you gotta put out the fire. You gotta try to stop the worst, most bad people from doing that, and it's got to be followed up with, right? Again, as I said, you have a forest fire here. You put out the fire. What's next? How do you prevent that from sparking up again? That's the next step. It needs to be reinforced. It can't just be, you know, doing what we do in terms of violent suppression every single day. And it seems like we never escape that. The next step is, you know, okay, provide support for folks and provide alternatives to folks immediately calling the police. That's part of it, right? Like I do like the like CAHOOTS program that they have up in, what was it? I'm trying to remember. It was some city in like Oregon or whatever, where we're starting a program similar to that in Rochester, where you call 911 for someone having a mental health crisis. It isn't necessarily a police officer coming in. It could be, but it's someone who's a trained mental health professional who can come in and help. Right? That's a good thing. Right? And again, if you're trusting, if you're worried about the police, then hey, that's another way. That's another good solution that could be out there. And it lowers. It can keep police focused on the actual violence. Right? Like again, that's not if you have limited resources, you have limited people who are available at any one given time to address any number of situations, and they have to choose between going to help someone having a mental health crisis or continuing to pursue someone who's involved in a potential violent situation that isn't necessarily mental health related. Okay, you know, like it would be great if police could focus on those things, on stopping the violence rather than the mental health things, where you have folks who are specifically trained for that situation to do that. This is not unheard of either. This is the police in many cities used to be like the ambulance drivers. They used to be the ones who'd take you to the hospital. And that stopped. We stopped doing that after a while because and at first it met with a lot of resistance. Lots of folks are like, there's no way that like anyone else can do this. What if someone's being unruly? What if someone's being violent? How are you going to have like medical folks deal with those situations? And you know what? They did. People figured it out. We got specialists for that sort of thing. It worked out. We could do the same thing with other aspects of it, right? It's some people, you know, they're having a bad day. Police get involved in that situation. They are worried and defensive, and it's understandable. And there might be some folks too. Jump in and better handle that situation. That's part of one of the solutions. Thanks again for joining us here on A Free Solution. We're going to be back in just a few minutes. Give us a call if you want to participate in the show, 585-346-3000. That's 585-346-3000. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Talk to you soon.
Free Solution on the WYSL stations.
Welcome back to A Free Solution. I'm Kevin Wilson-Eros for today. Thank you so much for joining us here on this wonderful Monday afternoon. Again, please give us a call if you want to participate in the show, 585-346-3000. That's 585-346-3000. Or leave your comments online as well. And we'll get to a couple more that came in right before the break. Patty on Facebook says, you know, here in my little upstate city, it's been stabbings and knife-related murders this year. People are exploding with anger. Again, yeah, it's again, 2 points about this, right? Like, and this becomes important when we think about, you know, how do we actually solve this problem? Is one, it's not just gun violence, too. It's other forms of violence as well. And two, it's not just Rochester, right? So, like, you know, when you start to think about, like, well, what are the patterns that unite these different cities? And, you know, how is the violence manifesting itself? That makes you think about what solutions are going to be more effective, right? And so kind of to that end, right, when Kathy Hochul and other usually Democrats are proposing gun control legislation, that does two things. One, it doesn't solve the fundamental problem of people acting violently towards one another. Two, it doesn't, despite making it illegal, it doesn't actually make it impossible for bad people to get guns. It just makes it illegal for law-abiding folks to get guns, and it turns law-abiding citizens into, or otherwise law-abiding citizens, into criminals. And I think most of you listening who've been listening for a while know my stance on self-defense is that the Second Amendment does limit the government from infringing on that right to self-defense. Again, a right that we already have, and the Second Amendment just limits the government at the federal, state, and local level from infringing on that right. And yeah, stopping bad people from, or good people from, being able to defend themselves from potentially bad, dangerous people does not solve the problem. It just turns, again, good people into victims. Just takes away their means of being able to defend themselves. Read this other comment from Badger, too. It says, many people have lost all hope. Combined world economic health and personal issues, many have fallen into despair. People with nothing to lose are actually very, very dangerous. I agree. And again, that gets into, like, Patty, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that gets into what some of those solutions are. And you know, I'll get to those in the last segment, because I think it's important to get to that. It's solving some economic issues. It's finding ways for people to have hope. And you know, to that end, again, I do obviously see it's part of that process of, it's not just please come in, grab the violent people. It's also the immediate support of nonprofit organizations, of communities, of other folks coming together to, you know, be able to find folks who are in trouble, you know, usually, you know, young kids, right? And trying to support them where they can. Not always going to work, but you do what you can. And for those families who are on the edge, for those families who are terrified, fearful, and doing things to, you know, again, as I mentioned, doing things that could lead them down a dark path, like finding support where you can. It's intervention. It's support. It doesn't necessarily have to be government in this case. It can be nonprofit organizations. There's a lot of folks trying different things in the city to do that. But again, sometimes it's not always direct. Sometimes it's not always direct violence intervention. Sometimes it's just making sure that people feel safe, or there's somewhere for them to go, or that there's effective third places, right? And by third place, I mean somewhere to go that's not home, work/school. It's where can you go to just hang out and build community? That's in a safe way, right? That's doesn't always have to be the government doing that. I know a lot of folks on the left think, like, oh yes, libraries and rec centers. Like, yeah, okay, maybe, but like, more than that too, can businesses thrive and create a safe space for people to just be, right? That's important. But if those businesses can't survive because of the conditions that the state and local governments have set out, then where else are people going to hang out? Sometimes in a government-approved place, or sometimes, you know, no place at all. They'll go to an empty lot and hang out, right? Which, again, it's, you know, maybe no one's doing anything that's bad there, but sometimes it creates situations where it drives people to do ugly things. So let's talk about the state level solutions. Again, you know what the big debate that's going to happen on the state level, right? You got I already kind of mentioned what Kathy Hochul's mentioned. You know, she supports greater gun control laws, and then the bail reform stuff, right? I'm weirdly like kind of caught in the middle with these candidates, which is why I support Larry Sharp, because you know he supports policies that are a lot more sensible, like a more sensible approach to bail reform than either Democrats or Republicans, and protecting our liberty on Second Amendment issues. But, you know, you got this. She supports the gun control laws. Those aren't going to work. It's not going to work. It hasn't worked. It will continue not working. It doesn't make us safer to make law-abiding people defenseless. Full stop. That's what it is. And it doesn't fully get rid of the problem anyway. People are going to be violent, you know, and so for the handful of folks, if you don't solve the underlying issue, they're still going to find a means to do that. And so on the bail reform stuff, too, you know, I've mentioned this before. I haven't really changed my position too much on this, is that the bail reform itself isn't really the problem, right? Like, no one should have to be in jail because they can't afford to pay money, right? Like, that's what bail reform intended to address. And you also note, like, on an ad, because this isn't a problem specific to Rochester, this isn't a problem specific to New York State. There's a violence problem going on everywhere. Some places that had bail reform, some places that didn't, crimes are going up everywhere, right? Like, it's not a issue specific to this place at this time. The bail reform part of that, I agree with that. I don't think reversing that is going to reverse the trend of violence in the city, because that's not the fundamental. Because again, if you have money, you can get out. Unless your proposed reform, which I've heard people say, but I strongly disagree with this, unless your proposed reform is everyone accused of violence, we suspend habeas corpus and, you know, decide to just lock up everybody who is even accused of violence, then that's one thing it could do, but we're talking about suspending the Constitution here. No, we can't do that. So what can you do? Again, you could have reforms where you introduce some level of, when accused of specific types of violent crimes, there already is some level. You can't have bail in some cases. You can't have restrictions such as home monitoring or frequent check-ins, or you know, you can't have detention in certain situations, but okay, expand the ability of judges to be able to do that, right? And then be able to have quick remedies where there's unjust situations where a judge might be acting inappropriately for someone who may have been falsely accused, maybe not, but be able to get someone released if there's not sufficient evidence to hold them until trial. And it's really important that we do that. That's constitutional stuff. Again, I made the comparison to folks who were accused at the January 6th stuff. There's some folks who were held for a long time who may have not actually done anything wrong. Okay, so for those folks who are waiting trial, who, you know, are separated from their families, their jobs, their communities, you don't want to hold those folks if they didn't actually do anything illegal. That's really important. Our constitutional system does that, because once you get rid of that, even for situations like addressing an emergency of violence, it can be used against you too. So, again, what we can do is I'm not saying that the system we have is perfect. I'm just saying that the bail reform, making it so that someone isn't held just for money, is a good reform. The system never held people who are accused of crimes just because they are accused of being dangerous indefinitely. That's not what happened. They could pay their way out. That's always been a thing. And we don't want to hold people indefinitely based on an accusation, because then we're throwing out the Constitution. So what we can do is, again, just move a little bit towards an evaluative process to be able to have people detained in those particular types of situations where you have a certain amount of evidence to be able to detain someone until trial. But you got to be super careful about it. Like, I don't know that. I think there's a way to be able to adjust to that reality in this situation without throwing out the Constitution altogether. And We'll read a couple more comments. Gene says, our president said that constitutional amendments are subjective. Yeah, no, he sure did. I mean, so President Biden, President Trump, President Obama, like, they're all pretty loosey-goosey on the Constitution. So forgive me for not trusting the opinion of the president on that stuff. And I know Facebook users saying I was talking about them. I don't know who you are, man. You're anonymous in here. But so we talked about that. Again, the bail reform, we talked about gun control laws. And we come back, I want to talk about what can we actually do, right? What are some reforms that could help solve the fundamental issues? It's not just immediately putting out the fire at this point. It's not providing immediate relief. What do you do for a long-term situation to make these things better? Thanks again for joining us here on A Free Solution. Give us a call if you want to participate in the show, 585-346-3000. That's 585-346-3000. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Talk to you soon.
Why do businesses choose to move their website from Wix and Squarespace to Simple Tech Innovations? Maybe it's their excellent customer service or attention to detail. Maybe it's their ability to give a truly customized solution. Or perhaps they just like the fact that Simple Tech is a local small business that builds great relationships with its clients. Whatever the reason may be, you can rest assured knowing that the local team at Simple Tech has your best interest in mind when building or updating your website. There. Hands-on and love helping customers achieve their goals. But don't take my word for it. They've won the best in Rochester 8 years in a row and have an A+ Better Business Bureau rating. If your website doesn't match your dreams or isn't achieving your goals, give the professionals at Simple Tech Innovations a call today for a consultation at 585-200-3182. That's 585-200-3182. Simple Tech Innovations.
As a veteran of the United States military, I can finally get the opportunity to enjoy special events, things that we couldn't afford, thanks to VetTix.
Every empty seat at a concert, a game, or a play is a missed opportunity to say thanks to a veteran and service member. We can give our veterans a special event where they, too, can create their own cherished memories. Visit VetTix.org. Find out how you can make a difference in a veteran's life.
WYSL. Getting podcasts of your favorite WYSL shows is easier and better than ever. Use your favorite device, PC, mobile, or tablet to visit WYSL1040.com. Simply click on the podcast tab to select, listen, download, and share instantly.
Works great with any wireless device. No additional apps are necessary.
Podcasts of all our local shows are easier to access and play, so share them with your friends. And thanks for listening anywhere, anytime to the Voice of Liberty, the WYSL stations.
A free solution on the WYSL stations.
Welcome back to A Free Solution. I'm Kevin Wilson, your host for today. Thanks again for joining us on this wonderful Monday afternoon. Whether you're listening on WYSL or listening online, thank you all for being here. And we are going to talk about some solutions for this, 100%. I'm going to get to it. I'm determined to get to actual solutions on this one, not just outlining the problem. But first, we're going to take a call. Keith is on the line. Keith, welcome back to A Free Solution.
Yes, sir. I know you wanted to talk about the reforms, but quickly, the protesters from January 6th, I brought this up with Mr. Sharp. Those protesters marched to the Capitol with the name Trump on their lips. The Trumpster has never been to those jail tombs in Washington to show any concern. More than a year and a half later, he's never made the trip once to visit those people. He's rich enough. He could have gotten up some kind of legal fund to help these people with their legal expenses. I've asked people, why has the Donald never made the trek to those, as I'm calling them, jail tombs deep in Washington, D.C., to lend any emotional support, anything support at all, period, to those people incarcerated? And secondly, you said the Constitution, we can't lock people away, even the violent ones. But look what has been done in closing here with these protesters. They have been locked away. Their rights have been taken away. But in the same way, and this will be my parting comment again, I asked Mr. Sharp his input. Why do you, Mr. Wilson, think that I'm a Trump supporter, but I'm calling him the Trumpster. He's never made a vigil to see those people who are locked away in his name. His name was on their lips as they marched to the Capitol. Why has the Donald never ventured forth to give any support to those people locked away like that? I think it's inexcusable that Trump has never helped them in any way.
Yeah. No. So again, thanks for the call, Keith. I'm gonna answer, you know, two of those questions, right? Why has Donald Trump never gone to, you know, visit the folks who were arrested for the January 6th thing, and why are they able to be locked up too, right? So we'll start with one. Why hasn't Donald Trump visited? I think it's for two reasons. One is he doesn't want to look like he's supporting those folks, in part because he's afraid that he's going to face legal consequences for what happened on January 6th. So he's covering his own butt, number one. Number two is, don't expect politicians to support you if things go wrong like that, right? Again, just because you think you're fighting in a politician's name, don't expect him to stand up for you and be on your side in those situations. Like, it's just, you can't count on them. They're, unfortunately, many of them, and I think Donald Trump is included in this, and I include Obama and Biden and many others in this too. Like, when the going gets tough, they're going to do what they can to save face and maintain the power that they can. They want you to put your neck on the line, not their own. That's, again, the harsh reality, and there's probably some exceptions to that, but a lot of times that's what it is. The other part is, again, you know, the folks being detained until trial. Again, rules work a bit differently on the federal level. I know there's some folks who really were, like, they destroyed property, they had done some things, and many of them, you know, were held or are still being held in some situations. I don't like that. Again, I don't like holding people until trial in most situations. It's, you are innocent until proven guilty, and you should, in most situations, not every situation, but in most situations, be able to walk free until you are proven guilty in a court of law. And it's tough, because applying those principles universally is really difficult, but it should apply to those folks who were involved in January 6th or accused of being involved in January 6th stuff, and it should apply to people in Rochester too, because sometimes innocent people are picked up and accused of violent crimes that they did not commit. And, you know, they have an assertion that most of the time, most people are not going to be violent, even when awaiting trial, right? I don't have the stats in front of me right now, but most of those folks, like 95% of them, aren't going to commit any other crimes, and only like less than 1% of them will commit a violent crime when released on bail. And again, if you do that, you're released on bail, and then you get credibly accused of another violent crime, then yeah, maybe there needs to be some mechanism to hold people until trial if they're going to be a menace or they're going to be a danger to society. And I'm open to what that reform looks like. But again, the reform of until someone's actually proven guilty, not taking away their liberty, is important. And so let's get to some of those solutions. Again, there's the bail reform stuff. Even if we reversed it today, I don't think it's going to make that big of a dent, the trend, because, again, it's not directly connected with that. The gun control stuff, doesn't matter if we try to take away every single gun, it's not going to make the streets of Rochester safer. Again, it's just going to turn law-abiding citizens into criminals and take away our means of self-defense. So the longer-term solutions, again, after you find ways to combat the initial violence, to get the folks who are most violent, most dangerous off the streets right now, is just, as one of our listeners, Patty, had mentioned, it's to facilitate hope, right? It's to find ways to give people opportunities to succeed. It's removing the barriers created by state, local, and national policy for businesses to be able to grow, for businesses to be able to thrive. You know, there's things like, you know, there's these proposals out there in Congress to crack down on, like, independent contractors, right? You know, and the way they phrase it is like, oh, we're helping independent contractors. You know, we're just trying to protect the Uber drivers and the Grubhub drivers and whatever. You know, it's those are people are using those as their jobs. If you make it more difficult for these companies to hire these individuals who, you know, may have complex childcare needs, who may need some flexibility in their work because they're working a service industry job that has irregular hours and they want to be able to pick up these hours, you know, in between those, they want the flexibility to be able to work. That doing stuff like that creates hope. Doing things where, you know, younger people can go and work and get job experience and do things, you know, and get involved in their community sooner. Great. You should be able to do that. It should be easy to do. And I mention this every time. You know, COVID was definitely part of this, right? I talked about the need for a third place. I talked about the need for places for young people to be able to go and build community and build relationships and sometimes get, you know, work or nonprofit experience. All those shut down during COVID temporarily, right? Like, and that's created ripple effects that we're still dealing with today. You know, when you're isolated, when the only thing you can do is something that, you know, doesn't have the approval of anyone else in your community, is I want to go see my friends. I want to go do things. You can do it under the radar. That is a way to do it. So building that hope is a big part of that. And then two is take away the profit from the black market activities, right? We're moving towards that with some marijuana laws in New York State, but I think the black market's still going to stay in place even with the marijuana legalization, because it's going to be so taxed and so regulated that the black market's going to stay in place, and there'll still be profitability in transporting and selling marijuana illegally. And when you have that situation, what ends up happening is that you can't go to the police, you can't go to the court system to figure out disputes, right? You can't just say, hey, this person ripped me off and I'm going to take them to court to try to get my $500 worth of goods back or to get some sort of compensation. What do you do? Well, you threaten them, use violence against them. You steal, you go and forcefully take the thing that was taken from you. And when you have situations where, well, it's operating in the black market, so by asking for relief from injury, you end up, you know, showing that you committed a crime. Well, you're not going to do that. And then even when you do, when police are overwhelmed with solving a whole bunch of other problems that we could have other organizations and other individuals and other specialists solve, they're not going to get to some of that petty stuff anyway all the time. Well, that's what's going to happen. That, unfortunately, that's so when you're able to do that, you're able to have police focus on just the most serious issues. When you have hope, when you eliminate the black market, when you create new opportunities for people to be able to thrive in the economy and start to move towards safer communities, we'll see a drastic reduction in violence. That's the hope. That's what we have to work to create. It's gonna take a lot of work. Thanks again for joining us here on A Free Solution. I will be back on Wednesday. Tomorrow, Larry Sharp will be in. Have a wonderful, wonderful week, folks. Take care.